Okay, well, you know what I'm going to say, and what I'm going to do tonight is a bit different, but I will begin as I always do, and I'll say, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. Now, what I'm going to do is note a couple of things here at this point. One, by the way, where we're going to turn is chapter 33 of the book of Numbers, or Bamidbar, in the wilderness. And this would begin what is called Parsha Masei, which are stages. These are the Masei, the stages of the B'nai Israel, is how it begins in chapter 33, verse 1, by which they went forth out of the land of Mitzrayim by their hosts under the hand of Moshe and Aaron. And Moshe wrote down their goings forth, stage by stage, by the commandment of Yehovah, and there are 42 of them, essentially. So we'll go through some of this, but what I wanted to say up front is, the last week's Torah portion, sometimes they double it up. And that was one of the times where it was doubled up. And honestly, I really didn't like it. I think that Masei and combining that with Matot is just a bit much, because there's so much, as you saw, that we need to talk about in that Torah portion, arguably this one too. But to my mind, it makes more sense. And so that's what I'm going to do this week is, in order to stay at least more or less on track, I'm going to double up this week instead and put Masei with the first chapter, first couple of chapters, of the book of Devarim, which is Deuteronomy, and also the words, if you will, the words that Moshe spoke during the last month of his life. And I think it's probably, in some respects, a better fit. Yeah, it overlaps a book, which probably is something that the rabbis don't like to do. But in any case, the connection here is we're going to end with talking about these stages of the B'nai Israel. Then Moshe is going to, in Devarim, going to give us another recap, similarly, of some of the journeys, although this is going to be more extended. Anyway, it goes like this. So let me abbreviate chapter 33 through the end of Masei, and the last book, or the last portion in the book of Devarim. Moshe wrote things out, 42 places. They journeyed from Ramses in the first month, 15th day of the month, the morning after the Passover, when the B'nai Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians. And while they were burying the dead, the ones that Yahuwah had smitten, because he had executed judgments on all of their fake gods. And thereafter, what we're going to do is get a list of all those 42 places where they journeyed. And a lot of redundant words in here. They journeyed from Ramses to Sukkot, where they pitched, then to Etham on the edge of the wilderness, then back into Pi-Hahirot, and then they pitched in Migdal, and then they journeyed from there, and they encamped in the wilderness of Etam and pitched in Merah, then to Elam, and then they pitched by the Red Sea, then the wilderness of Zin, and then they pitched in a place called Dovka, and then after that in a place called Alush. They journeyed from there, pitched in Rephidim, where there was no water. Remember the story from that one. And then they pitched in the wilderness of Sinai, Bamidbar Sinai. Journeyed from there, and they went to Kibrot Hata'ava. And from there, they pitched in Hazarot, and then in Rithma, and then in Ramon Perez. Then after that, Libna, and then to Risa, Kehela, and then Mount Sefer. Finally, in Harada, then they pitched in Machelot, then in Tahath, and then in Terah. And after that, they pitched in Mikah. And finally, they pitched in Hashmona. Then after that, they pitched in Maserot, and then Bene Ya'akan. Thereafter, they pitched in a place called Hor Hagidad. And thereafter, they journeyed to and pitched in a place called Yotba, then Abronah, then Etzion Geber. And then they journeyed from there, pitched in the wilderness of Zim. The same place is called Kadesh, where they pitched in Mount Hor at the edge of the land of Edom. And at this point, it says Aaron the Kohen Gadol went up to Mount Hor at the commandment of the of Yahuwah, and he died there. That was the 40th year that they were in the wilderness after they'd come out of Egypt. In the fifth month, on the first day of the month, Aaron was 123 years old when he died in Mount Hor. And then we're going to hear the story that we're going to actually hear this one again in the next portion as well. Canaanite, the king of Aaron, who dwelt in the south of the land of Canaan, heard about the coming of the B'nai Israel. And then they journeyed to Zalmona and pitched there. Then Punan, Obot, on the edge of at a place called Ihe Abarim on the border of Moab. Then to Dibon Gad. Then Almon Diblataim. And then after that, the mountains of Abarim in front of Mount Nebo. Then they pitched by the plains of Moab by the Jordan River at Jericho. Pitched at Jordan and from Beth Yeshimot unto Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab. And there it says, Yehoah spoke to Moshe in the plains of Moab by the Jordan near Jericho. And he said, speak unto the B'nai Israel and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, you're to drive out all of the inhabitants of the land from before you. Now, this, by the way, is one of those commandments that I've noted. It gets repeated a number of times, and it's always very emphatic. The conjugation of the words here, peel, and essentially the demonstrable level of vehemence that these words emphasize. Destroy all their figured stones. Destroy all their molten images. Demolish all their high places. Then drive out the inhabitants of the land and dwell there, because I've given it to you to possess. And, as we know, they'll inherit the land by lot, according to the families. The bigger ones get more inheritance, the fewer get less. And wheresoever the lot falls to any man, that's the part of the land that'll be his, according to the tribes of your fathers. That's how it'll be worked out. But here is a warning. And by the way, this warning is poignant because they failed. If you won't drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those that you let remain of them will be like thorns in your eyes and as pricks in your sides. They'll harass you in the land where you dwell. And it'll come to pass that as I thought I would do unto them, I will in fact do it unto you. Now the next chapter of the book here, as we're wrapping up the book of Debarim, Yahuwah says, command the B'nai Israel, say to them, when you come into the land of Canaan, here's what you're going to do to that land. This will be the land that will fall to you for an inheritance, the border of Canaan, the border of Canaan, as described. And here we're going to get that description. Your south side, from the wilderness of Zin near Edom, and the east to the Salt Sea. Then it turns southward up the ascent of Akrabim, passes along to Zin. And the goings out there shall be southward of Kadesh Barnea, goes forth to Hazar Adar, and then along to Asmon. Then the border turns from there to the brook of Egypt, and the goings out thereof will be at the sea. The western border, you'll have the Great Sea, which of course would be the Mediterranean for a border. This will be your west border, and this shall be your north border. From the Great Sea, you mark out a line unto Mount Hor, and then mark out a line to the entrance of Hamat. And the goings out of the border will be at Zedad. So these are the border, if you will, crossing points, entry points. The border will then go to Ziphron, and the goings out there will be at Hazar Enan. That's your north border. Then you mark out a line from the east border, from Hazar Enan to Shepham. And it goes down from Shepham to Riblah on the east side of Ain. And the border goes down and strikes up the slope of the Sea of Chinneret to the eastward. Then it goes down to the Jordan, and the goings out are at the Salt Sea. This will be your land according to the borders round about. So Moshe commanded the B'nai Israel, and he said, this is the land you're going to receive with your inheritance made by lot. And remember, that's how they're going to determine who gets what. The size is having to do with the size of the numbers of tribes, which Yahuwah has commanded to give unto the nine tribes and to the half tribe. Why are there nine tribes? Well, we had the two and a half tribes, the half tribe of Manasseh, that have already been described, and they have their inheritance on the other side of the river. For the tribe of the children of Reuben, according to their father's houses, and of the children of Gad, according to their father's houses, they've already gotten them. The half tribe of Manasseh as well. They've gotten their inheritance. So the two and a half tribes have received their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan at Jericho, to the east. And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, these are the names, the Shemot, of the men who will take possession of the land for you. Eleazar the priest, Joshua, son of Nun. Take one prince of every tribe to take possession of the land. Here are their names. Of Judah, Caleb. Oh, isn't that interesting? The son of Jephunneh. And remember, as has been pointed out, Caleb, and the very word means dog, he originally was not of the tribes of Judah. But here he has been, as Paul later writes, grafted in. And not only is he grafted in, he is the head of the tribe. Tribe of the children of Simeon, Shemuel, son of Amihud. Of Benjamin, Eledad, and I'll go through this fairly rapidly. Of the tribe of the children of Dan, Buki. Of the tribe of Joseph, in particular Manasseh, a prince, Haniel, son of Ephod. Of the tribe of the children of Ephraim, a prince, Kemuel, son of Shiftan. Of Zebulun, Elizaphan. of Issachar, Paltiel, of the tribe of the children of Asher, Ahihud, son of Shalomi, of the tribe of the children of Naphtali, a prince. Now, notice some of them say prince, others don't. Pedahel, son of Ammihud. These are they whom Yahuwah commanded to divide the inheritance of the B'nai Israel in the land of Canaan. And finally, the final chapter here in the book. Let's see. Actually, no, we got two more chapters. Chapter 35. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe in the plains of Moab by the Jordan, again, near Jericho, and he said, command the B'nai Israel that they give unto the Levites, their possession, cities to dwell in. Open land around about the cities, you'll give to them as well. These cities, they have to dwell in. Their open land shall be for their cattle, their substance, and all their beasts. The open land about the cities which you give to the Levites shall be from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits all the way around. Then you measure outside the city for the east side, 2,000 cubits, south side, 2,000, west, 2,000 cubits, north side, 2,000 cubits, city in the middle. This shall be to them the open land that surrounds the cities. And the cities which you shall give unto the Levites, there will be 6 of them, cities of refuge, which you'll give for the manslayer to flee to. Beside them, you have another 42 cities. All the cities which you give unto the Levites shall be 48. So 6 that are essentially cities of refuge, and then the other 42. And you give them along with the open land. Concerning the cities which you give for a possession of the B'nai Israel, from the many you shall take many, and from the few you shall take few. Each tribe, according to its inheritance, which it gives, shall give cities to the Levites. And then Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, speak unto the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you will appoint for yourselves these cities of refuge, so that the manslayer that kills any person through error, in other words, this is not for the murderer, this is for someone who's had an accident, horrible though it might be, and needs a place to flee so that he doesn't get killed, even though he is basically innocent of slaying or murder in that sense. These cities shall be for you for refuge from the avenger, so that the manslayer does not die, dies not, till he stands before the congregation for judgment. So the idea is to keep him alive until they can pass judgment. You'll give 3 cities beyond the Jordan. These 3 cities shall be in the land of Canaan, cities of refuge. For the B'nai Israel, and also for the stranger and the settler among them, these 6 cities will be for refuge. Everyone that kills any person through error can flee to them. But, now here we know, this is the other side of the coin. If he smote him with a rod of iron, an instrument of iron, anything that's made of iron, so that he died, he's a murderer. Murder shall surely be put to death. Now, we have one example when there's a head of an axe that comes off, and that's a little bit different situation, I think. The mere fact that it might have been made out of iron isn't so much of an indicator as if it's a sword or something that's clearly a weapon of destruction, we got a different problem. If he smote him with a stone in the hand that a man may cause to die, and he does, he died, well, that man is a murderer. The murderer shall also surely be put to death. How about if he smote him with a weapon of wood in his hand, things that might kill a man? He died, yep, this guy is a murderer, and he shall surely be put to death. The avenger of blood shall put himself, the murderer, to death. When he meets him, he puts him to death. And if he thrust him in hatred, or hurled at him anything, lying in wait so that he died, or in enmity smote him with his hand so that he died, he that smote him shall surely be put to death. He is a murderer too. The avenger of blood shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. But if he thrust him suddenly without enmity, in other words, he didn't do it, it just happened, or he hurled upon him anything without lying in wait, or a stone, or the kind of thing that might cause a man to die, but didn't see him, and he cast it upon him so that he died, and he wasn't, before that, he wasn't this person's enemy. In other words, there's not a suspicion here. Neither did he seek his harm. Then the congregation shall judge between the smiter and the smitee. And in this case, the smitee is dead, so it's the avenger of blood, according to these ordinances. And the congregation will deliver the manslayer out of the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall restore him to his city of refuge, the place that he fled to, and he shall dwell therein. So basically the idea is he flees, he goes to the city of refuge. How long's he got to wait? How long's he got to stay there? Well, up until the time the high priest dies, who was anointed with the holy oil, the Mashiach. He has been anointed, so he is a Mashiach, a high priest. Might be a while. If the manslayer is at any time to go beyond the border of his city of refuge where he's fleed, and the avenger of blood finds him outside the borders of that city, right? He goes outside the city. He is at grave risk. The avenger of blood slays a manslayer. Well, too bad. His blood guiltiness is upon him. There is no guilt for the avenger of blood, because he better had remain inside that city of refuge until the death of the high priest. After that, the manslayer may return into the land of his possession. And these things shall be for a statute of judgment unto you. This is interesting, right? We've seen this before. Throughout your generations in all your dwelling places. Not done away with. Whoso kills any person, the murderer, shall be slain at the mouth of witnesses. Remember, it takes two witnesses. But one witness shall not testify against any person that he die. So it takes two witnesses again. Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer. He's guilty of death. He shall surely be put to death. And you shall take no ransom for him that is fled to his city of refuge, that he should come out again to dwell on the land, up until the time of the death of the high priest. So you shall not pollute the land where wherein you are for blood. Blood pollutes the land, and no expiation can be made for the land for the blood that is shed therein, other than by, or but by, the blood of him that shed it. And you shall not defile the land which you inhabit, in the midst of which I dwell. For I, Yahuwah, dwell in the midst of the B'nai Yisrael. Okay. And then chapter 36, final chapter in the book. And the heads of the fathers' houses of the family of the children of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, so he is of the families of the sons of Joseph, they all came near. They spoke before Moshe, before the princes, heads of the fathers' houses, and they said, Yahuwah commanded my Lord to give the land for an inheritance by lot to the B'nai Israel. My Lord was commanded by Yahuwah to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, unto his daughters. Remember, that was last week's Torah portion. The daughters came. We got no male heir. How about us? So if they have been married to any of the sons of the other tribes of B'nai Israel, will their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of our fathers? And will it be added to the inheritance of the tribe that they belong to? So it ends up being taken away from the lot of our inheritance. In other words, we got a problem here a couple generations down the line when we start having these daughters that marry outside of the tribe and then the land. What happens to it? When the jubilee of the children of Israel shall be, then will their inheritance be added unto the tribe that they belong? So will their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers? Well, Moshe commanded the B'nai Israel according to the word of Yahuwah. So he's going to take care of this, saying, the sons of the tribe, the sons of Joseph, they speak correctly. So here is the thing which Yahuwah has commanded concerning the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, let them be married to whom they would like to. They can marry whoever they think best. Only it needs to be in the family of the tribe of their father that they shall be married. That way, no inheritance of the children of Israel is removed from tribe to tribe. But the B'nai Israel shall cleave every one to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. Every daughter that possesses an inheritance in any tribe of the B'nai Israel shall be wife unto one of the family of the tribe of her father, that the children of Israel may possess every man the inheritance of his fathers. So shall no inheritance be removed from one tribe to another, for the tribes of the B'nai Israel shall cleave each one to his own inheritance. So as you can imagine, over the centuries, this has been one of those things. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to intermarry. It's not just, in other words, Jewish or non-Jewish, as you might have heard in more recent times. It's really outside of this line of the tribes. And by this time, the tribes were, as we know, very large. So it's not like there weren't a fair number, but by no means millions, at least. And arguably, too, the geographic boundaries made it a bit easier. So it says, even as Yahuwah commanded Moshe, so the daughters of Zelophehad did. For Mahla, Tirzah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Noah, the daughters of Zelophehad, were married unto their father's brother's sons. They were married unto the families of the sons of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, and their inheritance did. It remained within the tribe of the family of their father. And here is the last verse in this book, which says, these are the commandments, and that's the mitzvot, and the ordinances, ha-mishpatim, which Yahuwah commanded by the hand of Moshe unto the B'nai Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. And as you know, when we end a book, it's traditional Kazakh, Kazakh, Venit, Kazakh. In other words, be strong and of good courage. And that's a good thing. Let's continue just a bit. And as already this is ending up, any of the times we have a double portion, it ends up being a long portion. But we'll talk about Deuteronomy, Devarim, chapters, the first three chapters as well here. And again, these are the words that Moshe spoke. That's how the book begins. And that is, of course, why it's called Devarim, because it says, here are Ha-Devarim, the words that Moshe spoke to all Israel. Same place we were just talking about, in the wilderness, beyond the Jordan, in the Arabah, over against Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hatzarot, and Ditzahab. Now, interestingly, there are some disagreement, I guess you would say. One of the claims that Rashi makes is these may not be real places. There may be some other thing happening here, and I don't know that that's ever been resolved. But yeah, let's just say it's one of those little mysteries that I've always found interesting, and beyond that, I don't have a lot I can add to it, unfortunately. But this is key. It's 11 days journey, 11 days to journey from Horeb unto Kadesh Barnea by the way of Mount Seir. Okay, so you were to make the same journey that took them 40 years, you could do it in 11 days. Came to pass, so obviously it took them a bit longer than that, and as you know, there is a long and arduous and important moral to that story. So it came to pass here in the 40th year, 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moshe spoke to the Bnei Israel according to all that Yahuwah had commanded him and given him in commandments. This is after he had smitten Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and Og, the fellow with the huge bed, the big dude, king of Bashan, who dwelt in Ashtaroth at Edrei. Beyond the Jordan in the land of Moab, Moshe took it upon himself to expound this HaTorah, this instruction. And think about it. Okay, the English, this one says this law. And while law is not incorrect, there certainly are better words, far more complete words. He is expounding an instruction. And anyway, you slice it. I mean, there's prophetic elements in this. There's going to be a whole lot of stuff in here that go way beyond merely statutes, judgments, and commandments, because the story itself, obviously, is important. Yahuwah our Elohim spoke unto us at Horeb, said Moshe, saying, you have dwelt long enough in this mountain, so turn, take your journey, go into the hill country of the Amorites and all the places nigh unto there, and in the Arabah, the hill country, the lowlands, the south, by the seashore, land of the Canaanites and Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, because behold, he says, I have given, now notice the past tense here, I have set the land before you. Go in and take it. Possess the land which Yahuwah swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give unto them and to their seed after them. And I, this is Moshe again speaking, spoke unto you at that time, saying, I just can't handle it. I am not able to bear you myself alone. Yahuwah your El has multiplied you, and behold, you are this day like the stars of heaven for multitude. And Yahuwah, Elohim of your fathers, may he make you 1,000 times as many as you now are, and bless you, as he's promised you. How can I myself alone bear your cumbrance and your burden and your strife? So give you and get you, each one of you, from your tribes, wise men, full of understanding and knowledge, and I'll make them heads over you. So he's describing, if you recall, the instruction and the wisdom that he got from Yitro. And you answered me then. You said, yep, that thing which you've spoken is good for us to do. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise men, full of knowledge, made them heads over you, captains of thousands and of hundreds and fifties, captains of tens, and officers, tribe by tribe. And I charged your judges, your shoftim, and it's shofetekim at this point, at that time, yours, it's a possessive form, y'all's judges, saying, hear the causes between your brethren. Judge righteously between a man and his brother and the stranger that's with him. You will not respect persons in judgment. So in other words, unlike what we see today, for example, where if you have a daddy who is a pretend president, you can do coke in the Oval Office and the Secret Service will cover for you. No, none of that. You are not to respect persons. You shall hear the small and the great alike. Not be afraid of the face of any man, even if you think he might be able to kill you. Nope. For the judgment is up to Elohim. Any case that's too hard for you, you bring it to me, and I'll hear it. And I commanded you at that time that all these things you should do. So, As we journeyed from Horeb, we went through the great and dreadful wilderness, which you saw, by way of the hill country, the Amorites, and Yahuwah our El commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea. And I said to you, you've come to the hill country of the Amorites, which Yahuwah has given to us. So behold, Yahuwah your El has set the land before you. Go up, take it, take possession. As Yahuwah, the Elohim of your fathers, has spoken, and Kazak, be strong and of good courage, fear not, do not be dismayed. But you came near to me, every one of you, he says. Now notice the terminology here, and you said, let's send men before us, and they can check it out. They'll spy out the land for us and bring us back word. Tell us which way we need to go, and the cities that we'll need to come to. And that thing pleased me well. So I took 12 men of you, one of each tribe. They turned, they went up in the mountains, they came to the valley of Eshcol, and they checked it out, they spied it out. They took of the fruit of the land, they brought it in their hands to us, and they said, hey, this is good land which Yahuwah your El has given unto us. It's our El in this case. But you know what? Y'all wouldn't go up. Instead, you rebelled against the commandment of Yahuwah your El, and you murmured, you whined in your tents. And, that didn't work out well, did it? And you said, because Yahuwah hated us, he brought us forth out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. So he may be being a bit kind. They probably said worse things than that. So why are we going up? Our brethren have made it our heart to melt, saying, these are strong. These are big dudes. These are scary people. And the cities are great. They're fortified up to the heavens. Moreover, we've seen the sons of the Anakim there, the giants and their kin. And I said to you, dread them not, nor be afraid of them. Yahuwah your El, it's he that goes before you. He'll fight for you, according to all he did for you in Egypt. Remember that? Right before your eyes. And in the wilderness, Bamidbar, where you've seen how Yahuwah your El bore you like a man bears his son, in all the way that you went till you came here to this place. And yet, in this thing he said, now notice this one is present tense. In this thing you do not believe Yahuwah your El. You don't believe. Who went before you in the way to seek out a place to pitch your tents, in fire by night to show you what way you should go, and in cloud by day. Yahuwah heard. He heard what you were saying, and he was pretty darn PO'd. He was wroth, and he swore, saying, surely there's not a one of these evil men of this generation, who will see the good land that I swore to give to your fathers, except the two that we know well, Caleb, son of Jephunneh. He'll see it. And to him will I give the land that he has trodden upon, and to his children, because he has wholly followed Yahuwah. And also, says Moshe, Yahuwah was angry with me for your sakes, saying, no, Moshe, you too, you don't get to go in there. And Joshua the son of Nun, who stands before you, he will go in there. Encourage thou him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. Moreover, your little ones, the ones you said would be a prey, your children, that this day have no knowledge of good or evil. I find that phrase kind of interesting. I've got it highlighted. Because remember, that was part of the trouble that they ran into in, at least the great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy did in the Garden of Eden, chapter 3. Well, they're going to go in there. Those ones, those children that have no knowledge, those innocents. They'll go in there. And unto them will I give it. They'll possess it. As for you, though, turn. Take your journey into the wilderness by way of the Red Sea. And you answered and you said to me, sorry, we've sinned against Yahuwah. We'll go up, we'll fight. According to all that Yahuwah has commanded us. And yet, every man girded on his weapons. He got ready for war. He deemed it a light thing to go up into the hill country. And it turns out he was wrong, right? They were all wrong. Because Yahuwah said to me, tell them not to go up, not to fight, because I'm not among you, lest you be smitten before your enemies. So I said so, I spoke, and you didn't listen. You all hearkened. Now notice, the people that he is actually talking to are everyone that was above the age of 20 anyway. They're dead. So there may have been some teenagers or some younger children, arguably, almost certainly there were, that are listening to this. And those that didn't, no doubt have heard the stories anyway. So this is the royal y'all here. You didn't hearken, but you rebelled against the commandment of Yahuwah. You were presumptuous, went up into the hill country. And the Amorites, they dwell there. They came out against you, chased you like bees, beat you down in Seir, even unto Hormat. And you returned, basically with your tail between your legs. And you wept before Yahuwah. But Yahuwah wouldn't hearken to your voice, nor give ear to you. So, in fact, you abode in Kadesh many days, according unto the days that you abode there. So it was a long time and a lesson learned, at least hopefully. So we turned. We took our journey into the wilderness by way of the Red Sea, or in more likelihood, the Sea of Reeds, as Yahuwah spoke to me. We compassed Mount Seir for a long time, many days. Then Yahuwah spoke to me, and he said, You've hung around, compassed this mountain long enough. Turn to the north. Command the people, saying, you are to pass through the borders of your brethren. Note the terminology. Your brethren, the children of Esau, they dwell in Seir. They'll be afraid of you. So take good heed to yourselves. Do not fight with them. Don't contend with them, because I'm not going to give you their land, not any of it. No, not so much as the sole of the foot to tread on, because I've given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession. You can purchase food from them for kesef, for silver, so that you can eat. You can also buy water of them for money, for silver, so that you can drink. For Yahuwah has blessed you in all the work of your hand. He has known your walking through this great wilderness. 40 years Yahuwah has been with you, and you haven't lacked anything. So, this is Moshe continuing. We passed by from our brethren, the children of Esau, that dwell there in Seir, by way of Arabah, from Eilat, from Etzion Geber, and we turned and we passed by the way of the wilderness, this time of Moab. And Yahuwah said to me, don't be fighting with Moab either. Don't be at enmity with them. Neither contend with them in battle, for I'm not going to give you their land, any of that, for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. The Emim dwelt therein before, people great and many and tall, like the Anakim. In other words, big, tall dudes, giant-like folks. These are accounted Rephaim, as are the Anakim. The Moabites of them, they have that name Emim that they call them. And in Seir dwelt the Horites before, but the children of Esau succeeded them. They destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their place, as Israel did in the land of his possession, which Yahuwah gave unto him. So now he said, rise up, get over the brook Zered. And we went. We went over the brook Zered, and the days in which we came from Kadesh Barnea till we came over the brook Zered were 38 years. And all that generation, the men of war, they were consumed from the midst of the camp, just as Yahuwah had sworn would happen. Moreover, the hand of Yahuwah was against them to discomfit them from the midst of the camp until they were finally consumed. So it came to pass when it was all done, when all the men of war were consumed, and that's another way of saying all the men over the age of 20, and they died from among the people, then Yahuwah spoke to me one saying. He said, you are this day to pass over the border of Moab, even Ar. When you come nigh over against the children of Ammon, do not harass them nor contend with them. I'm not going to give you their land for the children of Ammon, because I've given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. And that is also accounted a land of Rephaim, which dwelt therein aforetime. The Amorites, remember, they call them the Zamzumim, people great, many, and tall, kind of like the Anakim. But Yahuwah has destroyed them before those folks, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead, as he did for the children of Esau that dwell in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead even unto this day. So basically, these two sets of peoples that he has given the land to, both of them have done what he is now telling the children of Israel they're going to do. These big dudes, these tall people, these giants, you're going to have to dispossess them. And these other two groups did. So rise up, take your journey, pass over the valley of Arnon. Behold, I've given into your hand Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and all of his land. Begin to possess it, contend with him in battle. But this day I will begin to put the dread of you and the fear of you upon the peoples who are under the whole of Hashemayim, the whole of the heavens, so that when they hear a report about you, they'll tremble, and they will be in anguish because of you. So we're going to set them up before you even see them. This is, if you remember some of the things of Sun Tzu, this sounds like a little bit of a psychological warfare before the battle is even joined, and that makes sense because they are going up against the true master of war. So, back to Moshe. I sent messengers out of the wilderness of Kedemot unto Sihon, king of Heshbon, with these words of shalom, of peace, and I said the following. Let me pass through your land. I'll go along the highway. I won't turn to the right hand or the left. You can sell me food for kesef so that I can eat. Give me water for kesef so we can drink. Just let me pass through on my feet. As the children of Israel that dwelt in Seir and the Moabites that dwelt in Ar did unto me, I'll pass over the Jordan into the land which Yahuwah our El is giving to us. But you know what? Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him. For Yahuwah, your El, it says, hardened his spirit. Made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him into your hand, as it appears this day. So Yahuwah said to me, and this is Moshe again saying this, behold, I have begun to deliver up Sihon and his land before you. Begin to possess the land. So Sihon came out against us, he and all of his people, and unto battle at Yahaz. And Yahuwah our El delivered him up before us. We smote him and his sons, all of his people. We took all the cities that he had, utterly destroyed every city, the men and the women and the little ones. We left none remaining. Only the cattle, he says, we took for a prey or a spoil unto ourselves, along with the spoil of the cities which we'd taken, from Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley Arnon, and the city that's in the valley, even unto Gilead. There was not a city that was too high for us. Yahuwah our El delivered them all right up before us. Only to the land of the children of Ammon that you did not come near, on at the side of the river Yabbok, and the cities of the hill country, and wheresoever Yahuwah our El forbade us to go. Then we turned, and we went up the way towards Bashan. And here we go. Og, king of Bashan, he came out against us. That turned out to be a fatal mistake. He and all his people to battle at Edrei. And Yahuwah said to me, fear him not, because I've delivered him, all his people, everything he has, into your hand. And you will do to him just like you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon. So, Moshe says, Yahuwah our El delivered into our hand Og as well, king of Bashan, and all of his people, and we smote him till nothing was left remaining. We took all his cities at that time. There wasn't a city that we didn't take from them. 60 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og and Bashan. All these were fortified cities, right? Remember, cities that looked very powerful, high walls, gates, bars, and they were beside the unwalled towns and a lot of those. So we utterly destroyed them, just like we did to Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying every city, the men and the women and the little ones. But the cattle, the spoil, we took for a prey unto ourselves. We took the land at that time out of the hand of those two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, from the valley of Arnon to Mount Hermon. The Sidonians call it Sirion, Amorites call it Senir. And we took all the cities of the plain, to Gilead, to Bashan, Salca, Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og. Because only Og remained of the remnant of the Rephaim. Behold, now here we remember this, but it's going to be repeated for us. His bed, remember how big it was? It was made out of iron. Is it not in Rabbah of the children of Ammon? It was 9 cubits long, 9 cubits. That's about 14 and a half feet, folks. This is a big bed for a big dude. And it was 4 cubits wide after the cubit of a man. So we're not talking giant cubits. We're talking man cubits, about 18 inches. And this thing was huge. All this land we took in possession at that time, from Aroer by the valley Arnon, and the hill country, at least half of it, of Gilead, and the cities thereof, all of that I gave unto the Reubenites and to the Gadites, and the rest of Gilead, all of Bashan, the kingdom of Og, I gave to the half-tribe of Manasseh, the region of Argob. All that Bashan had is called the land of Rephaim. Yair, son of Manasseh, took the region of Argob, the border of the Geshurites and the Maakathites. He called them, even Bashan, after his own name. So it's called Havot Yair, that's his name, unto this day. Now I gave Gilead to Machir, and unto the Reubenites and the Gadites I gave from Gilead to the valley of Arnon, the middle of the valley for a border, even unto the river Yabbok, and that's the border of the children of Ammon, and Arabah also, the Jordan being the border there, and Chinneret, even unto the sea of Arabah, the salt sea, the slopes of Pisgah to the east. And I commanded you at that time, and I said, Yahuwah your El has given you this land to possess it. You will need to do this thing that you agreed to, right? You got to pass over armed before your children, before your brethren, the children of Israel, all the men of valor. Now, your wives, though, your little ones, your cattle, I know you got a lot of cattle, he said. Well, they can stay here. They can abide in your cities, which I have given you, until Yahuwah eventually gives rest unto all your brethren. In other words, until they have done what they are set out to do, take their land, and as unto you, and they also possess the land which Yahuwah your El is giving them on the other side of the Jordan, then shall you return every man to his own possession, which I've given you. And we're almost to the end of the chapter, the end of the parsha here, not quite the end of the chapter. And it says, Moshe then says, "And I commanded Joshua," at that time Yeshua, saying, "Your eyes have seen all that Uriel has done to those two kings, and understand this, so shall Yahuwah do unto all of the kingdoms that you go over to possess. Do not fear them, for Yahuwah Uriel, he it is that fights for you."